jaw ached. She emptied the contents of the bag onto the bed, ignoring the dunes of sugar that poured out with it, and surveyed the land of goodness before her. All of her favorites were there. Chocolate-covered gummies, chocolate almond bark, berry-shaped chews, gem-shaped hard sugar, peanut brittle, plain brittle, sugar lace, frosted red licorice, and, most importantly, chocolate. She popped a hazelnut truffle into her mouth. "Someone," she said in between chews, "is very good to me." She paused to examine the bag again. Who had sent it? Maybe Dorian. Certainly not Nehemia or Kaol. Nor the frost fairies that delivered presents to good children. They'd stopped coming to her when she'd first drawn blood from another human being. Maybe Nox. He liked her well enough. "Miss Selena!" Philippa exclaimed from the doorway, gaping. "Happy Yolmas, Philippa," she said. "Care for a candy?" Philippa stormed toward Selena. "Happy Yolmas indeed! Look at this bed! Look at this mess!" Selena winced. "Your teeth are red!" Philippa cried. She reached for the hand mirror that Selena kept by her bed and held it for the assassin to see. Sure enough, her teeth were tinged with crimson. She ran her tongue over her teeth, then tried to brush away the stains with a finger. They remained. "Damn those sugar suckers!" "Yes," Philippa snapped. "And that's chocolate all over your mouth! Even my grandson doesn't eat his candy like this." Selena laughed. "You have a grandson?" "Yes, and he can eat his food without getting it on the bed, on his teeth, and on his face." Selena pushed back the covers, sugar spraying into the air. "Have a candy, Philippa." "It's 7 in the morning. Philippa swept the sugar into her cupped palm. "You'll make yourself sick." "Sick? Who can get sick from candy?" Selena made a face and exposed her crimson teeth. "You look like a demon," said Philippa. "Just don't open your mouth and no one will notice." "You and I both know that's not possible." To her surprise, Philippa laughed. "Happy Yolmas, Selena," she said. Hearing Philippa call her by her name sent an unexpected burst of pleasure through her. "Come," the servant clucked. "Let's get you dressed. The ceremony begins at 9. Philippa bustled toward the dressing room, and Selena watched her go. Her heart was big and as red as her teeth. There was good in people, deep down. There was always a shred of good. There had to be. Selena emerged a while later, clad in a solemn-looking green dress that Philippa had deemed the only appropriate gown for temple attendance. Selena's teeth were, of course, still red, and now she felt queasy as she stared at the bag of candy. However, she quickly forgot about her sickness when she saw Dorian Havilliard sitting at the table in her bedroom with crossed legs. He wore a beautiful white and gold jacket. "Are you my present, or is there something in that basket at your feet?" she asked.
"If you'd like to unwrap me," he said, lifting the large wicker basket onto the table. "We still have an hour until the temple service."
She laughed. "Happy Yolmas, Dorian. And to you as well. I can see that I... Are your teeth red?" She clamped her mouth shut, shaking her head in violent protestation. He grabbed her nose and pinched it closed, and try as she might, she could not dislodge his fingers. She opened her mouth, and he burst into laughter.
"Been eating candies, have you?"
"You sent those?" She kept her mouth closed as much as possible.
"Of course."
He picked up the brown bag of candy on the table. "What's your..." He trailed off as he weighed the bag in his hands.
"Didn't I give you 3 pounds of candy?"
She smiled impishly.
"You ate half the bag."
"Was I supposed to save it?"
"I would have liked some."
"You never told me that."
"Because I didn't expect you to consume all of it before breakfast."
She snatched the bag from him and put it on the table. "Well, that just shows poor judgment on your part, doesn't it?" Dorian opened his mouth to reply, but the bag of candy tipped over and spilled across the table. Selena turned just in time to see the slender golden snout protruding from the basket, inching toward the candy. "What is that?" she asked flatly. Dorian grinned. "A Yolmas present for you." The assassin flipped back the lid of the basket. The nose instantly shot inward.
and Selena found the strange golden-haired pup quivering in a corner with a red bow around her neck.
"Oh, puppy," she crooned and petted her.
The dog trembled, and she glared at Dorian over her shoulder.
"What did you do, you buffoon?" she hissed.
Dorian threw his hands in the air. "It's a gift! I almost lost my arm, and more important parts, trying to put that bow on, and then she howled all the way up here." Selena looked piteously at the dog, which was now licking the sugar off her fingers. "What am I going to do with her? You couldn't find an owner, so you decided to give her to me?"
"No," he said. "Well, yes. But she didn't seem so frightened when you were around, and I remembered how my hounds followed you when we traveled from Mendovier. Perhaps she'll trust you enough to become adapted to humans. Some people have those kinds of gifts."
She raised an eyebrow as he paced.
"It's a lousy present, I know. I should have gotten you something better."
The dog peered up at Selena. Her eyes were a golden brown color, like molten caramel. She seemed to be waiting for a blow to fall. She was a beautiful thing, and her huge paws hinted that she might someday grow large and swift. A slight smile spread on Selena's lips. The dog swished her tail, once, then another time.
"She's yours," Dorian said, "if you want her."
"What shall I do with her if I'm sent back to Mendovier?"
"I worry about that."
Selena stroked her folded velvet soft ears, then ventured low enough to scratch her chin. The pup's tail wagged in earnest. Yes, there was life in her.
"So you don't want her?" he muttered.
"Of course I want her," Selena said, then realized what the implications would be. "But I want her trained. I don't want her urinating on everything and chewing on furniture and shoes and books. And I want her to sit here when I tell her to, and lay down and roll over and whatever it is that dogs do. And I want her to run. Run with the other dogs when they're practicing. I want her to put those long legs to use."
Dorian crossed his arms as Selena scooped up the dog.
"That's a long list of demands. Perhaps I should have bought you jewelry after all."
"When I'm training."
She kissed the pup's soft head, and the dog nestled her cold nose against Selena's neck.
"I want her in the kennels training as well. When I return in the afternoon, she may be brought to me. I'll keep her in the night."
Selena held the dog at eye level. The dog kicked her legs in the air.
"If you ruin any of my shoes," she said to the pup, "I'll turn you into a pair of slippers."
"Understood?" The dog stared at her, her wrinkled brow lifting, and Selena smiled and set her down on the floor. She began sniffing about, though she stayed far from Dorian, and she soon disappeared beneath the bed. The assassin lifted the dust ruffle to peer underneath. Thankfully, the word marks had been washed away entirely. The dog continued her exploration, sniffing everywhere.
"I'll have to think of a name for you," she said to her, and then stood.
"Thank you," she said to Dorian. "It's a lovely gift." He was kind, unnaturally kind for someone of his upbringing. He had a heart, she realized, and a conscience. He was different from the others. Timidly, almost clumsily, the assassin strode over to the crown prince and kissed him on the cheek. His skin was surprisingly hot, and she wondered if she'd kissed him properly as she pulled away and found his eyes bright and wide. Had she been sloppy? Too wet? Were her lips sticky from the candy? She hoped he wouldn't wipe his cheek.
"I'm sorry I don't have a present for you," she said.
I didn't expect you to." He blushed madly and glanced at the clock. "I have to go. I'll see you at the ceremony, or perhaps tonight after the ball. I'll try to get away as early as I can, though I bet that without you there, Nehemia will probably do the same, so it won't look bad if I leave early, too."
She'd never seen him babble like this.
"Enjoy yourself," she said as he took a step back
and almost crashed into the table.
"I'll see you tonight, then," he said, "after the ball."
She hid her smile behind a hand. Had her kiss thrown him into such a tizzy?
"Goodbye, Selena."
He looked back when he reached the door. She smiled at him, flashing her red teeth, and he laughed before he bowed and disappeared. Alone in her rooms, Selena was about to see what her new companion was up to when the thought struck her. Nehemia would be at the ball. It was a simple enough thought at first, but then worse thoughts followed it. Selena began pacing. If Nehemia were truly somehow behind the champion's murders, and worse, had some feral beast at her command to destroy them, and also just learned about the massacre of her people, then what better place to punish Otterlin than at the ball, where so many of its royals would be celebrating and unguarded? It was irrational, Selena knew, but what if Nehemia unleashed whatever creature she controlled at the ball? Fine, she wouldn't mind if Kaltane and Parrington met horrible deaths, but Dorian would be there. And Kaol. Selena strode into her bedroom, wringing her fingers. She couldn't warn Kaol, because if she were wrong, then it would ruin not just her friendship with Nehemia, but also the princess's efforts at diplomacy. But she couldn't just do nothing. Oh, she shouldn't even be thinking like this. But she'd seen friends do terrible things before, and it had become safer for her to believe the worst. She'd witnessed firsthand how far a need for revenge could drive someone. Perhaps Nehemia wouldn't do anything. Perhaps she was just being paranoid and ridiculous. But if something happened tonight... Selena opened the doors to her dressing room, surveying the glittering gowns hanging along the walls. Kaol would be beyond furious if she infiltrated the ball. But she could handle it. She could handle it if he decided to throw her in the dungeons for a little while, too. Because somehow, the thought of him getting hurt, or worse, made her willing to risk just about anything. "Will you not even smile on Yulmus?" she asked Kaol as they walked out of the castle and toward the glass temple at the center of the eastern garden.
"If my teeth were crimson, I wouldn't be smiling at all," he said. "Be content with an occasional grimace."
She flashed her teeth at him, then closed her mouth as several courtiers strode past, servants in tow.
"I'm surprised you're not complaining more."
Complaining about what? Why did Kaol never joke with her as Dorian did? Perhaps he truly didn't find her attractive. The possibility of it stung more than she would have liked.
"About not going to the ball tonight."
He glanced sidelong at her. He couldn't know what she was planning. Philippa had promised to keep it a secret, promised not to ask questions when Selena requested she find a gown and matching mask. "Well, apparently you still don't trust me enough." She meant to sound sassy, but couldn't keep the snap from her tone. She couldn't waste her time worrying about someone who clearly had no interest in her beyond the ridiculous competition. Kaol snorted, though a hint of a smile appeared on his lips. At least the Crown Prince never made her feel stupid or rotten. Kaol just provoked her, though he had his good side, too. And she had no idea when she'd stopped loathing him so much. Still, she knew he wouldn't be pleased when she appeared at the ball tonight. Mask or no mask, Kaol would know it was her. She just hoped he wouldn't punish her too severely.
Chapter 37. Seated in a pew in the rear of the spacious temple, Selena kept her mouth closed so tightly that it hurt. Her teeth were still red. She didn't need anyone else noticing. The temple was a beautiful space, built entirely from glass. The limestone covering the floor was all that remained of the original stone temple, which the King of Otterlin had destroyed when he decided to replace it with the glass structure. Two columns of about 100 rosewood pews stretched beneath a vaulted glass ceiling that let in so much light that no candles were needed during the day. Snow lay piled upon the translucent roof, casting patterns of sunshine throughout. As the walls were also glass, the stained windows above the altar appeared to hover in midair. She stood to peer over the heads of those sitting in front of her. Dorian and the Queen sat in the first pew, a row of guards immediately behind. The Duke and Kaltane sat on the other side of the aisle, and behind them were Nehemia and several others she didn't recognize. She didn't spy Nox, or the other remaining champions, or Kane. They'd let her come to this, but not to the ball?
"Sit down," Kaol growled, pulling at her green gown.
She made a face and dropped onto the cushioned bench. Several people stared at her. They wore gowns and jackets so elaborate that she wondered if the ball had been moved to lunchtime. The High Priestess walked onto the stone platform and raised her hands above her head. The folds of her midnight blue gossamer robe fell around her, and her white hair was long and unbound. An 8-pointed star was tattooed upon her brow, in a shade of blue that matched her gown, its sharp lines extending to her hairline.
Welcome all, and may the blessings of the goddess and all her gods be upon you.
Her voice echoed across the chamber to reach even those in the back. Selena stifled a yawn. She respected the gods, if they existed, and when it suited her to ask for their assistance. But religious ceremonies were brutal. It had been years and years since she'd attended anything of this sort, and as the High Priestess lowered her arms and stared at the crowd, the assassin shifted in her seat. It would be the usual prayers, then the Yulmus prayers, then the sermon, then the songs, and then the procession of the gods.
"You're squirming already," Kaol said under his breath.
"What time is it?" she whispered, and he pinched her arm.
"Today," the priestess said, "is the day on which we celebrate the end and the beginning of the great cycle. Today is the day on which the great goddess gave birth to her firstborn, Lumas, Lord of the Gods. With his birth, love was brought into Aurelia, and it banished the chaos that arose from the gates of the Word."
A weight pressed on her eyelids. She had woken up so early, and slept so little after that encounter with Nehemia. Unable to stop, Selena wandered into the land of sleep.
"Get up," Kaol snarled into her ear.
"Now."
She sat up with a jolt, the world bright and foggy. Several lesser nobles in her pew laughed silently. She gave Kaol an apologetic look, and turned her gaze to the altar. The High Priestess had finished her sermon, and the songs of Yulmas were over. She only had to sit through the procession of the gods, and then she would be free.
"How long was I asleep?" she whispered.
He didn't respond.
"How long was I asleep?" she asked again,
and noticed a hint of red in his cheeks.
"You were asleep, too?"
"Until you began drooling on my shoulder."
"Such a self-righteous young man," she cooed, and he poked her leg.
"Pay attention."
A choir of priestesses stepped off the platform. Selena yawned, but nodded with the rest of the congregation as the choir gave their blessings. An organ sounded, and everyone leaned to stare down the aisle for the procession of the gods. The sound of pattering footsteps filled the temple, and the congregation stood. Each blindfolded child was no more than 10 years old, and though they looked rather foolish dressed in the costumes of the gods, there was something charming about it. Every year, 9 children were chosen. If a child stopped before you, you received the blessings of the god, and the small gift the child carried as a symbol of the god's favor. Farnor, god of war, stopped at the front row near Dorian, but then moved to the right, across the aisle, to give the miniature silver sword to Duke Parrington.
Not surprising.
Clad in glistening wings, Lumas, god of love, strode past her. She crossed her arms.
What a foolish tradition.
Diana, goddess of the hunt and maidens, approached. Selena shifted from one foot to the other, wishing she hadn't demanded that Kaol give her the aisle seat. To her dread and dismay, the girl stopped before her and removed the blindfold. She was a pretty little thing. Her blonde hair hung in loose curls, and her brown eyes were flecked with green. The girl smiled at Selena and reached to touch the assassin's forehead. Selena's back began sweating as she felt hundreds of eyes upon her.
"May Diana, the huntress and protector of the young, bless and keep you this year. I bestow upon you this golden arrow as a symbol of her power and good graces."
The girl bowed as she extended the slender arrow. Kaol prodded her back, and Selena grabbed the arrow.
"Yulmas blessings to you," the girl said,
and Selena nodded her thanks. She gripped the arrow as the girl bounded away. It couldn't be used, of course, but it was made of solid gold.
"It'll fetch a nice price."
With a shrug, Selena handed the arrow to Kaol.
"I suppose I'm not allowed to have this," she said, sitting down with the rest of the crowd.
He put it back in her lap.
"I wouldn't want to test the gods."
She stared at him for a moment.
Did he look different?
Something had changed in his face. Nudging him with an elbow, Selena grinned. Chapter 38 Yards of silk, Clouds of powder, brushes, combs, pearls, and diamonds glistened before Selena's eyes. As Philippa arranged the last strand of Selena's hair neatly around her face, secured a mask over her eyes and nose, and placed a small crystal tiara on her head, Selena couldn't help but feel, despite herself, like a princess. Philippa knelt to polish the lump of crystal on Selena's silver slippers.
If I didn't know better, I'd call myself a fairy queen. It's like...
Philippa caught herself before she spoke the word the King of Otterlin had so effectively outlawed, then quickly said,
I barely recognize you.
Good, Selena said. This would be her first ball where she wasn't there to kill someone. True, she was mostly going to make sure Nehemia didn't hurt herself or the court, but a ball was a ball. Maybe if she was lucky, she could dance a little.
Are you certain this is a good idea?
Philippa asked quietly, standing.
Captain Westfall won't be pleased.
Selena gave the servant a sharp look.
I told you not to ask questions.
Philippa huffed.
Just don't tell them I helped you when you get dragged back here.
Checking her irritation, Selena strode to the mirror, Philippa bustling after her. Standing before her reflection, Selena wondered if she was seeing correctly.
This is the most beautiful dress I've ever worn, she admitted, her eyes filling with light.
It was not pure white, but rather a grayish offset, and its wide skirts and bodice were encrusted with thousands of minuscule crystals that reminded Selena of the surface of the sea. Swirls of silk thread on the bodice made rose-like designs that could have passed for a work by any master painter. A border of ermine lined the neck and provided slender sleeves that only covered her shoulders. Tiny diamond droplets fell from her ears, and her hair was curled and swept up onto her head, strands of pearls woven in. Her gray silk mask had been secured tightly against her face. It wasn't fashioned after anything, but the delicate crystal and pearl whorls had been crafted by a skilled hand.
You could win the hand of a king looking like that, said Philippa. Or perhaps a crown prince will do. Where in Aurelia did you find this dress?
Selena murmured.
Don't ask questions, clucked the old woman.
Selena smirked.
Fair enough.
She wondered why her heart now felt too large for her body, and why she was so unstable in her shoes. She had to remember why she was going. She had to keep her wits about her. The clock struck 9, and Philippa glanced toward the doorway, giving Selena the opportunity to slip her makeshift knife down her bodice without being noticed.
How exactly are you going to get to the ball? I don't think your guards will let you just walk out.
Selena shot Philippa a sly look.
We're both going to pretend that I was invited by the Crown Prince, and right now you are going to make such a fuss about me being late that they won't object.
Philippa fanned herself, her face reddening. Selena grasped her hand.
I promise, she said, if I get into any sort of trouble, I will swear to my last breath that you were deceived by me and had no knowledge of anything. But are you going to get into trouble?
Selena gave her most winning smile.
No.
I'm just sick of being left to sit around while they have grand parties. It wasn't quite a lie.
Gods help me, Philippa muttered, and took a deep breath.
Go! She suddenly cried, herding Selena toward the door to the hall.
Go! You'll be late!
She was a bit too loud to be totally convincing, but Philippa flung open the door to the hallway.
The Crown Prince won't be pleased if you're late!
Selena paused in the doorway, nodding at the 5 guards who were posted outside, then looked back at Philippa.
Thank you, Selena said. No more dawdling, the servant woman cried,
and almost knocked Selena off her feet as she pushed her out the doorway and slammed it shut. Selena turned to the guards.
You look nice,
one of them, Ress, said shyly.
Off to the ball,
grinned another.
Save a dance for me, will you?
The third added. Not one of them questioned her. Selena smiled and took Ress's arm as he extended it to her. She tried not to laugh when he puffed out his chest. But as they neared the great hall and the sounds of a waltz could be heard, a swarm of bees took flight in her stomach. She couldn't forget why she was here. She'd played this part in the past, but it had ended in killing a stranger, not comforting a friend. The red and gold glass doors appeared, and she could see the wreaths and candles that bedecked the massive hall. It would have been easier if she could have slipped into the ball through a side door and remained unnoticed, but she hadn't had time to go exploring through the secret tunnels to find another way out of her rooms, and she certainly couldn't find another way into the ball now without raising suspicions. Ress stopped and bowed.
"This is where I leave you,"
he said as seriously as he could, though he kept looking at the ball that lay at the foot of the stairs.
"Have a lovely night, Miss Sardothian."
"Thank you, Ress."
She felt an urge to vomit and run back to her rooms. Instead, she graciously nodded her farewell. She just had to make it down the stairs and find a way to convince Kaol to let her stay. Then she could keep an eye on Nehemia all night. Her shoes seemed frail, and Selena took a few steps back, ignoring the guards at the door as she lifted her feet high and set them down to test the strength of the shoes. When she was assured that not even a jump through the air could snap the heel, she approached the top of the stairs. Tucked into her bodice, the makeshift knife poked her skin. She prayed to the goddess, to every god she knew, to the word, to whatever was responsible for her fate, that she wouldn't have to use it. Selena squared her shoulders and stepped forward.
What was she doing here?
Dorian almost dropped his drink as he saw Selena Sardothian atop the stairs. Even with the mask, he recognized her. She might have her faults, but Selena never did anything half-heartedly. She'd outdone herself with that dress. But what was she doing here? He couldn't tell if it was a dream or reality until several heads, then many, turned to look. Though the waltz was playing, those not dancing quieted themselves as the mysterious masked girl lifted her skirts and took a step, then another. Her dress was made of stars plucked from the sky, and the whorls of crystals in her gray mask glittered.
"Who is that?"
breathed a young courtier beside him. She looked at no one as she descended the staircase, and even the Queen of Otterland stood to see the late arrival, Nehemia also rising from her seat beside her. Had Selena lost her mind?
"Walk to her. Take her hand."
But his feet were leaden, and Dorian could do nothing except watch her. His skin flushed beneath his small black mask. He didn't know why, but seeing her made him feel like a man. She was something out of a dream in which he was not a spoiled young prince, but a king. She reached the bottom of the stairs, and Dorian took a step forward. But someone had already arrived, and Dorian clenched his jaw tight enough for it to hurt as she smiled and bowed to Kaol. The captain of the guard, who hadn't bothered to wear a mask, extended his hand. Selena stared only at Kaol with those starlit eyes, and her long white fingers floated through the air to meet his. The crowd began chattering as Kaol led her from the stairs, and they disappeared into the throng. Whatever conversation they were about to have, it wasn't going to be pleasant. He'd be better off staying out of it.
"Please," said another courtier, "tell me that Kaol doesn't suddenly have a wife."
"Captain Westfall," said the courtier who had spoken earlier, "why would a pretty thing like that marry a guard?"
Remembering who stood beside him, he glanced at Dorian, who was still staring wide-eyed at the stairs.
"Who is she, Your Highness? Do you know her?"
"No, I don't,"
whispered Dorian, and walked away. The waltz was driving, and so loud she had difficulty hearing herself think as Kaol pulled her into a shadowy alcove. Not surprisingly, he hadn't worn a mask. It would be too silly for him, which made the fury on his face all too visible.
"So," he seethed, holding tightly to her wrist, "do you want to tell me how you got it into your mind that this was a good idea?"
She tried shaking off his hand, but he wouldn't let go. Across the great hall, Nehemia sat with the Queen of Otterlin, occasionally glancing in Selena's direction. Because she was nervous, or just surprised to see her.
"Relax," she hissed at the captain of the guard. "I only want to have some fun."
"Fun? Crashing a royal ball is your idea of fun?"
Arguing wouldn't help. She could tell that his anger was mostly about being embarrassed that she'd managed to slip out of her rooms in the first place. So she gave him a pitiful pout.
"I was lonely."
He choked.
"You couldn't spend one evening on your own?"
She twisted her wrist out of his grasp,
Knox is here, and he's a thief. How could you let him come? With all this jewelry flashing about, and not me. How can I be the king's champion if you don't trust me?
Actually, that was a question she really wanted to know the answer to. Kaol covered his face with a hand and let out a long, long sigh. She tried not to smile. She'd won. If you take one step out of line. She grinned in earnest.
Consider it your Yulmas present to me.
Kaol gave her a weighing look, but slumped his shoulders.
Please don't make me regret this.
She patted his cheek, sweeping past him.
I knew I liked you for some reason.
He said nothing, but followed her back into the crowd.
She'd been to masked balls before, but there was still something unnerving about not being able to see the faces of those around her.
Most of the court, Dorian included, wore masks of varying sizes, shapes, and colors, some of simple design, others elaborate and animal-shaped. Nehemia still sat with the queen, wearing a gold and turquoise mask with a lotus motif. They appeared to be engaged in polite conversation, and Nehemia's guards stood to the side of the dais, already looking bored. Kaol kept close to her as she found an empty spot in the crowd and stopped. It was a good vantage point. She could see everything from here. The dais, the main stairs, the dance floor. Dorian was dancing with a small brunette with outrageously large breasts that he took no pains to avoid glancing at every so often. Hadn't he noticed her arrival? Even Parrington had seen her when Kaol dragged her into that corner. Thankfully, the captain had subtly moved her away before she had to interact with him. Across the room, she met Knox's eye. He was flirting with a young woman wearing a dove mask, and he raised his glass in salute before turning back to the girl. He'd opted for a blue mask that concealed only his eyes.
Well, try not to have too much fun, Kaol said beside her, crossing his arms.
Hiding her scowl, Selena crossed her arms as well and began her vigil. An hour later, Selena was beginning to curse herself for being a fool. Nehemia was still sitting with the queen and hadn't looked again in Selena's direction. How had she even considered that Nehemia, of all people, would attack everyone? Selena's face burned with shame beneath the mask. She didn't deserve to call herself a friend. All the dead champions and mysterious evil powers and this ridiculous competition had made her go mad. Selena smoothed the fur on her dress, frowning slightly. Kaol remained beside her, saying nothing. Though he'd allowed her to stay, she doubted he'd soon forget this. Or that the guards wouldn't get the tongue-lashing of their lives later tonight. Selena straightened as Nehemia suddenly rose from her seat beside the queen's throne, her guards snapping to attention. She bowed her head to the queen, the light of the chandeliers making her mask glisten, and then strode off the dais. Selena felt each of her heartbeats hammering in her veins as Nehemia wove through the crowd, her guards close behind, and halted in front of Selena and Kaol.
You look beautiful, Lillian, Nehemia said in the common tongue,
her accent as thick as it had ever been. It felt like a slap in the face. She'd spoken with perfect fluency that night in the library. Was she warning Selena to keep quiet about it?
As do you, Selena said tightly. Are you enjoying the ball?
Nehemia played with a fold in her dress. And from the look of the rich blue fabric, it was probably a gift from the Queen of Otterlin.
Yes, but I'm not feeling well, the princess said. I'm going back to my rooms.
Selena gave her a stiff nod. I hope you feel better, was all she could think of to say. Nehemia looked at her for a long moment, her eyes shining with what seemed like pain, and then left. Selena watched her walk up the stairs, and didn't tear her gaze away until the princess was gone. Kaol cleared his throat.
Do you want to tell me what that was all about?
None of your business, she replied. Something could still happen, even if Nehemia wasn't here, something could happen. But no, Nehemia wouldn't repay pain with more pain. She was too good for that. Selena swallowed hard. The makeshift knife in her bodice felt like a dead weight. Even if Nehemia wasn't going to hurt anyone tonight, that didn't prove her innocence.
What's wrong? Kaol pressed.
Forcing herself to push aside her shame and worry, Selena lifted her chin. With Nehemia gone, she still had to keep watch, but maybe she could attempt to have a little fun, too.
With you scowling at everyone, no one will ask me to dance.
Kaol's dark brows rose.
I'm not scowling at everyone.
Even as he said it, she spotted him frowning at a passing courtier who looked too long in Selena's direction.
Stop it, she hissed. No one will ever ask me to dance if you keep doing that.
He gave her an exasperated look and strode off. She followed him to the border of the dance floor.
Here,
he said, standing at the edge of the sea of swirling gowns. If anyone wants to ask you to dance, you're in plain sight. From this spot, she could also still make sure no feral beasts were about to rip into the crowd. But he didn't need to know that. She glanced at him.
Would you like to dance with me?
He laughed.
With you? No.
She looked at the marble floor, her chest tight.
You needn't be so cruel.
Cruel? Selena Parrington is just over there. I'm sure he's not happy about you being here, so I wouldn't risk drawing his attention any more than necessary.
Coward!
Kaol's eyes softened.
If he weren't here, I would have said yes.
I can easily arrange that, you know.
He shook his head as he adjusted the lapel on his black tunic. Just then, Dorian waltzed by, sweeping the brunette with him. He didn't even glance at her.
Anyway, Kaol added, jerking his chin at Dorian, I think you have far more attractive suitors vying for your attention. I'm boring company to keep.
I don't mind being here with you.
I'm sure you don't, Kaol said dryly, though he met her stare.
I mean it. Why aren't you dancing with anyone? Aren't there ladies whom you like?
I'm the captain of the guard. I'm not exactly a catch for any of them.
There was some sorrow in his eyes, though it was well concealed.
Are you mad? You're better than everyone in here. And you're very handsome, she said, taking his hand in her free one.
There was beauty in Kaol's face, and strength, and honor, and loyalty. She stopped hearing the crowd, and her mouth became dry as he stared at her.
How had she missed it for so long?
You think so?
He said after a moment, looking at their clasped hands. She tightened her grasp.
Why, if I wasn't...
Why aren't you two dancing?
Kaol dropped her hand. She had difficulty turning away from him.
And with whom would I dance, Your Highness?
Dorian was alarmingly handsome in his pewter tunic. One might say it matched her dress.
You look radiant, he said.
And you look radiant as well, Kaol. He winked at his friend. Then Dorian's gaze met hers, and Selena's blood turned into shooting stars.
Well, do I need to lecture you about how stupid it was to sneak into the ball, or can I just ask you to dance with me instead? I don't think that's a good idea, Kaol said.
Why?
They asked in unison. Dorian stepped a little closer to her. Even though she was ashamed of herself for believing such awful things about Nehemia, knowing that Dorian and Kaol were safe made the misery worth it.
Because it attracts too much attention, that's why.
Selena rolled her eyes, and Kaol glared at her.
Do I have to remind you who you are?
No, you remind me every day, she retorted.
His brown eyes darkened.
What was the point in being nice to her if he was only going to insult her the next moment?
Dorian put a hand on her shoulder and gave Kaol a charming smile.
Relax, Kaol, he said, and his hand slipped to rest on her back, his fingers grazing her bare skin.
Just take the night off. Dorian turned her from the captain.
It'll do you some good, he said over his shoulder, though the merriness faded from his tone. I'm getting a drink, muttered Kaol, and walked away.
She watched the captain for a moment. It would be a miracle if he considered her a friend. Dorian caressed her back, and she looked at him. Her heart jumped into a gallop, and Kaol dissolved from her thoughts like dew beneath the morning sun. She felt bad for forgetting him, but she wanted Dorian. She couldn't deny it. She wanted him.
You look beautiful,
Dorian said quietly, running an eye over her in a way that made her ears burn.
I haven't been able to stop staring at you.
Oh, and I thought you hadn't even noticed me.
Kaol got there first when you arrived. And besides, I had to work up the nerve to approach you. He grinned. You're very intimidating, especially with the mask.
And I suppose it didn't help you that you had a line of ladies waiting to dance with you.
I'm here now, aren't I? Her heart tightened, and she realized it wasn't the answer she'd been hoping for. What did she want from him? He held out his hand, inclining his head. Dance with me?
Was there music playing? She'd forgotten. The world had shrunk into nothing, dissolved by the golden glow of candles. But there were her feet, and here was her arm, and her neck, and her mouth. She smiled and took his hand, still keeping one eye on the ball around them. Chapter 39. He was lost. Lost in a world of which he'd always dreamed. Her body was warm beneath his hand, and her fingers were soft around his. He spun her and led her about on the floor, waltzing as smoothly as he could. She didn't falter a single step, nor did she seem to care about the many angry female faces that watched as dance after dance passed, and they didn't switch partners. Of course, it wasn't polite for a prince to dance with only one lady, but he couldn't focus on anything beyond his partner and the music that carried them onward.
You certainly have a lot of stamina, she said.
When had they last spoken?
It could have been 10 minutes or an hour ago. The masked faces around them blurred together. While some parents hit their children, mine also punished me with dancing lessons.
Then you must have been a very naughty boy. She glanced around the ball, as if she were looking for something, or someone.
You're gracious with your compliments tonight.
He twirled her. The skirts of her gown sparkled underneath the chandelier. It's Yulmas, she said. Everyone's kind on Yulmas. A flash of what he could have sworn was pain shone in her eyes, but it was gone before he could be certain of it. He caught her around the waist, his feet moving to the beat of the waltz.
And how's your present?
Oh, she hid under my bed, then in the dining room, which is where I left her.
You locked the dog in your dining room?
Should I have kept her in my bedroom where she could ruin the carpets? Or in the gaming room where she might eat the chess pieces and choke?
Perhaps you should have sent her to the kennels where dogs belong.
On Yulmas? I couldn't think of sending her back to that wretched place. He suddenly felt the urge to kiss her, hard, upon the mouth. But this, what he felt, it could never be real.
Because once the ball was over, she would go back to being an assassin, and he would still be a prince.
Dorian swallowed hard. For tonight, though. He held her closer. Everyone transformed into mere shadows on the wall. Frowning, Kaol watched his friend dance with the assassin. He wouldn't have danced with her anyway, and he was glad he hadn't worked up the nerve to ask her, not after seeing the color that Duke Parrington's face turned upon discovering the pair. A courtier named Otho stepped beside Kaol.
I thought she was with you.
Who, Lady Lillian?
So that's her name. I've never seen her before. Is she newly arrived to court?
Yes, said Kaol. Tomorrow he'd have a word with her guards about letting Selena out tonight. Hopefully by then he'd be less inclined to knock their heads together.
How are you doing, Captain Westfall?
Otho said, clapping him on the back a bit too hard. His breath reeked of wine.
You don't dine with us anymore.
I stopped dining at your table 3 years ago, Otho.
You should come back. We miss your conversation.
It was a lie. Otho only wanted information about the foreign young lady. His reputation with women was well known in the castle. So well known that he had to seize courtiers as they arrived, or go into Rifthold for a different sort of woman. Kaol watched Dorian dip Selena, watched the way her lips widened in a smile, and her eyes burst with light as the crown prince said something. Even with the mask on, Kaol could see the happiness written across her face.
Is he with her? Otho asked.
The Lady Lillian belongs to herself and no one else.
So she's not with him?
No.
Otho shrugged. That's strange.
Why?
Kaol had the sudden urge to strangle him.
Because it looks like he's in love with her,
he said, and walked away. Kaol's eyes lost focus for a moment. Then Selena laughed, and Dorian kept staring at her. The prince hadn't once taken his eyes off her. Dorian's expression was full of something. Joy? Wonder? His shoulders were straight, his back erect. He looked like a man. Like a king. It was impossible for such a thing to have occurred. And when would it have happened? Otho was a drunk and a womanizer. What did he know of love? Dorian spun Selena with speed and dexterity, and she snapped into his arms, her shoulders rising with exhilaration. But she wasn't in love with him. Otho hadn't said that. He had seen no attachment on her part, and Selena would never be that stupid. It was Dorian who was the fool. Dorian who would have his heart broken, if he did actually love her. Unable to look at his friend any longer, the captain of the guard left the ball. Caltaine watched in rage and agony as Lillian Gordana and the Crown Prince of Otterland danced and danced and danced. Even with a much more concealing mask, she would have recognized the upstart. And what sort of a person wore gray to a ball? Caltaine looked down at her dress and smiled. Bright shades of blue, emerald, and soft brown. Her gown and matching peacock mask had cost as much as a small house. It was all a gift from Parrington, of course, along with the jewelry that decorated much of her neck and arms. It was certainly not the dull, drab mess of crystal that the conniving harlot wore. Parrington stroked her arm, and Caltaine turned to him with fluttering eyelashes.
"You look handsome tonight, my love," she said, adjusting a gold chain across his red tunic.
His face quickly matched the color of his clothes. She wondered if she could bear the repulsion of kissing him. She could always keep refusing, just as she had for the past month, but when he was this drunk, she would have to think of a way out as soon as possible. But she was no closer to Dorian than she'd been in early autumn, and would certainly make no progress with Lillian in the way. A precipice opened before her. Her head gave a brief, faint throb of pain. There were no other options now. Lillian had to be eliminated. When the clock chimed 3, and most of the guests, including the Queen and Kaol, had left, Selena finally decided that it was safe for her to leave. So she slipped from the ball when Dorian went to get a drink, and found Ress waiting outside to escort her back. The halls of the castle were silent as they strode to her room, taking the empty servants' passages to avoid any too curious courtiers learning more about her. Even if she'd gone to the ball for the wrong reasons, she had had some fun dancing with Dorian. More than some, actually. She smiled to herself, picking at her nails as they entered the hallway that led to her rooms. The rush of having Dorian look only at her, talk only to her, treat her as if she were his equal and more, hadn't yet worn off. Maybe her plan hadn't been such a failure after all. Ress cleared his throat, and Selena looked up to see Dorian standing outside her rooms, chatting with the guards. He couldn't have stayed long at the ball if he'd beaten her back here. Her heart pounded, but she managed a coy smile as Dorian bowed to her, opened the door, and they went inside. Let Ress and the guards think what they wanted. She unfastened the mask from her face, tossing it onto the table in the center of the foyer, and sighed as the cool air met her flushed skin.
"Well?" she asked,
leaning against the wall beside the door to her bedroom. Dorian approached her slowly, halting only a hand's breadth away.
"You left the ball without saying goodbye," he said, and braced an arm against the wall beside her head.
She raised her eyes, examining the black detail on the sleeve that fell just above her hair.
"I'm impressed you got up here so quickly, and without a pack of court ladies hounding after you.
Perhaps you should try your hand at being an assassin."
He shook the hair out of his face.
"I'm not interested in court ladies," he said thickly, and kissed her.
His mouth was warm, and his lips were smooth, and Selena lost all sense of time and place as she slowly kissed him back. He pulled away for a moment,
looked into her eyes as they opened, and kissed her again. It was different this time, deeper, full of need. Her arms were heavy and light all at once, and the room twirled round and round. She couldn't stop. She liked this, liked being kissed by him, liked the smell and the taste and the feel of him. His arm slipped around her waist, and he held her tightly to him as his lips moved against hers. She put a hand on his shoulder, her fingers digging into the muscle that lay beneath. How different things were between them than when she'd first seen him in Endovir. Her eyes opened. Endovir. Why was she kissing the Proud Prince of Otterlin? Her fingers loosened, and her arm dropped to her side. He removed his mouth from hers and smiled. It was infectious. Dorian leaned forward again, but she smoothly put two fingers against his lips. I should go to bed, she said.
He raised his eyebrows.
Alone, she added. He removed her fingers from his mouth. He tried to kiss her, but she easily swung under his arm and reached for the door handle. She had opened the bedroom door and slid inside before he could stop her. She peered into the foyer, watching as he continued to smile. Good night. Dorian leaned against the door, bringing his face close to hers. Good night, he whispered, and she didn't stop him as he kissed her again. He broke it off before she was ready, and she almost fell onto the ground as he removed his weight from the door. He laughed softly. Good night, she said again, heat rushing to her face. Then he was gone. Selena strode to the balcony and flung open the doors, embracing the chill air. Her hand rose to her lips, and she stared up at the stars, feeling her heart grow and grow and grow. Dorian walked slowly back to his rooms, his heart racing. He could still feel her lips on his, smell the scent of her hair, and see the gold in her eyes flickering in the candlelight. Consequences be damned. He'd find a way to make it work. He'd find a way to be with her. He had to. He had leapt from the cliff. He could only wait for the net. In the garden, the captain of the guard stared up at the young woman's balcony, watching as she waltzed alone, lost in her dreams, but he knew that her thoughts weren't of him. She stopped and stared upward. Even from a distance, he could see the blush upon her cheeks. She seemed young. No. New. It made his chest ache. Still, he watched. Watched until she sighed and went inside. She never bothered to look below. Chapter 40. Selena groaned as something cold and wet brushed her cheek and moved to lick her face. She opened an eye and found the puppy looking down at her, its tail wagging. Adjusting herself in the bed, she winced at the sunlight. She hadn't meant to sleep in. They had a test in 2 days, and she needed to train. It was their last test before the final duel, the test that decided who the 4 finalists would be. Selena rubbed an eye and then scratched the dog behind the ears.
Have you peed somewhere and wished to tell me about it?
Oh, no, said someone as the bedroom door swung open. Dorian. I took her out at dawn with the other dogs. She smiled weakly as he approached.
Isn't it rather early for a visit?
Early? He laughed, sitting on the bed. She inched away. It's almost 1 in the afternoon. Philippa told me you've been sleeping like the dead all morning.
1? She'd slept that long? What about lessons with Kaol?
She scratched her nose and pulled the puppy onto her lap. At least nothing had happened last night. If there had been another attack, she would have heard about it already. She almost sighed with relief, though the guilt of what she'd done, how little faith she'd had in Nehemia, still made her a tad miserable.
Have you named her yet?
He asked. Casual, calm, collected. Was he acting that way for show, or was their kiss just not that important to him?
No, she said, keeping her face neutral, even though she wanted to scream from the awkwardness. I can't think of anything appropriate.
What about, he said, tapping his chin,
Goldie?
That's the stupidest name I've ever heard.
Can you think of something better?
She picked up one of the dog's legs and examined the soft paws. She squished the padded foot beneath her thumb. Fleetfoot. It was a perfect name. In fact, it felt as if the name had existed all along, and she'd finally been clairvoyant enough to stumble across it.
Yes, Fleetfoot it is.
Does it mean anything?
He asked, and the dog raised her head to look at him.
It'll mean something when she outruns all of your purebreds.
Selena scooped the dog into her arms and kissed her head. She bounced her arms up and down, and Fleetfoot stared up into her eyes with a wrinkled brow. She was absurdly soft and cuddly. Dorian chuckled.
We'll see.
Selena set the dog down on the bed. Fleetfoot promptly crawled under the blankets and disappeared.
Did you sleep well? He asked.
Yes, though it seems you didn't if you were up so early.
Listen, he began, and Selena wanted to throw herself from the balcony. Last night, I'm sorry if I was too forward with you.
He paused.
Selena, you're grimacing.
Had she been making a face? Sorry.
It did upset you then.
What did?
The kiss. Phlegm caught in her throat, and the assassin coughed.
Oh, it was nothing, she said, thumping her chest as she cleared her throat. I didn't mind it, but I didn't hate it, if that's what you're thinking.
She immediately regretted saying it. So you liked it?
He grinned lazily.
No, oh, go away.
She flung herself onto her pillows, pulling the blankets above her head. She was going to die from embarrassment. Fleetfoot licked her face as she hid in the darkness of the sheets.
Come now, he said.
From your reaction, one would think you'd never been kissed.
She threw back the blankets, and Fleetfoot burrowed farther beneath.
Of course I've been kissed, she snapped, trying not to think about Sam and what she'd shared with him. But it wasn't by some stuffed shirt, pompous, arrogant princeling.
He looked down at his chest.
Stuffed shirt?
Oh, hush up, she said, hitting him with a pillow.
She moved to the other side of the bed, got up, and walked to the balcony. She felt him watching her, staring at her back and the three scars she knew her low-cut nightgown did nothing to hide.
Are you going to remain here while I change?
She faced him. He wasn't looking at her the way he had the night before. There was something wary in his gaze, and something unspeakably sad. Her blood thrummed in her veins.
Well?
Your scars are awful, he said, almost whispering.
She put a hand on a hip and walked to the dressing room door.
We all bear scars, Dorian. Mine just happen to be more visible than most. Sit there if you like, but I'm going to get dressed.
She strode from the room. Caltaine walked beside Duke Parrington through the endless tables of the palace greenhouse. The giant glass building was full of shadows and light, and she fanned herself as the steamy heat smothered her face. The man picked the most absurd places to walk. She had about as much interest in the plants and flowers as she did in a mud puddle on the side of a street. He picked a lily, snow white, and handed it to her with a bow of his head.
For you.
She tried not to cringe at the sight of his pocked, ruddy skin and orange mustache. The thought of being stuck with him made her want to rip all the plants out by their roots and throw them into the snow.
Thank you, she said huskily.
But Parrington studied her closely.
You seem out of spirits today, Lady Caltaine.
Do I?
She cocked her head in her coyest expression.
Perhaps today pales in comparison to the fun I had at the ball last night.
The Duke's black eyes bored into her, though, and he frowned as he put a hand on her elbow and steered her on.
You needn't pretend with me. I noticed you watching the Crown Prince.
Caltaine gave nothing away as she raised her manicured brows and looked sidelong at him.
Was I?
Parrington ran a meaty finger down the spine of a fern. The black ring on his finger pulsed, and her head gave a throb of pain in response.
I noticed him, too. The girl, specifically. She's troublesome, isn't she?
Lady Lillian?
Kaltain blinked this time, unsure whether she could sag with relief just yet. He hadn't noticed her wanting the prince, but rather that she'd noticed how Lillian and Dorian clung to each other all night.
"So she calls herself," Parrington murmured.
"That's not her name?"
Kaltain asked before she could think. The Duke turned to her, his eyes as black as his ring.
"You don't honestly believe that girl is a purebred lady?"
Kaltain's heart stopped.
"She's truly not?"
And then Parrington smiled and finally told her everything. When Parrington finished, Kaltain could only stare at him.
An assassin.
Lillian Gordana was Selena Sardothian, the world's most notorious assassin. And she had her claws in Dorian's heart. If Kaltain wanted Dorian's hand, then she'd need to be far, far cleverer. Simply revealing who Lillian truly was might be enough, but it might not. Kaltain couldn't afford to take risks. The greenhouse was silent, as if it held its breath.
"How can we let this go on? How can we allow the prince to endanger himself like that?"
Parrington's face shifted for a moment, toward something pained and ugly, but it was so fast she barely noticed it above the pounding rising in her head. She needed her pipe, needed to calm down before she had a fit.
"We can't," Parrington said.
"But how can we stop them? Tell the king?"
Parrington shook his head, putting a hand on his broadsword as he thought for a moment. She examined a rose bush and traced a long nail along the curve of a thorn.
"She's to face the remaining champions in a duel," he said slowly. "And in the duel, she'll drink a toast in honor of the goddess and gods."
It wasn't just her too tight corset that stole the breath from Kaltain as the Duke went on. She lowered her hand from the thorn.
"I was going to ask you to preside over the toast as a representation of the goddess. Perhaps you could slip something into her drink."
"Kill her myself?"
Hiring someone was one thing, but to do it herself. The Duke raised his hands.
"No, no. But the king has agreed that drastic measures should be taken, in a way that will make Dorian believe things were an accident. If we were merely to give her a dose of bloodbane, not lethal, but just enough to cause her to lose control, it would give Cain the advantage he needs."
"Cain can't kill her on his own? Accidents happen all the time in duels."
Her head gave a sharp, intense throb that echoed through her body. Maybe drugging her might be easier.
"Cain thinks he can, but I don't like taking risks."
Parrington grasped her hands. His ring was ice cold against her skin, and she fought the urge to rip her hands from his grip.
"Don't you want to help Dorian? Once he's free of her..."
"Then he'll be mine. He'll be mine as he should be. But to kill for it, he'll be mine."
"Then we'll be able to get him on the right path, won't we?"
Parrington finished with a broad smile that made her instincts tell her to run and run and never look back. But all her mind could see was a crown and throne, and the prince who would sit by her side.
"Tell me what I need to do," she said.
Chapter 41. The clock chimed 10, and Selena, seated at the small desk in her bedroom, looked up from her book. She should be sleeping, or at least trying to. Fleetfoot, dozing in her lap, yawned widely. Selena scratched her behind the ears and ran a hand along the page of the book. Word marks stared up at her, their intricate curves and angles speaking a language she couldn't yet begin to decipher. How long had it taken Nehemia to learn them? And, she wondered darkly, how could their power possibly still work when magic itself was gone? She hadn't seen Nehemia since the ball last night, hadn't dared to approach her or tell Kaol what she'd learned. Nehemia had been deceitful about her language skills and how much she knew about the word marks, but she could have any number of reasons for that. Selena had been wrong to go to the ball last night, wrong to believe Nehemia was capable of such bad things. Nehemia was one of the good ones. She wouldn't target Selena, not when they'd been friends.
They had been friends.
Selena swallowed the tightness in her throat and turned the page. Her heart stopped.
There, looking up at her,
were the symbols she'd seen near the bodies. And in the margin, written by someone centuries ago, was the explanation. For sacrifices to the Ritterak, using the victim's blood, mark the area around it accordingly. Once the creature has been summoned, these marks guide the exchange. For the flesh of the sacrifice, the beast will grant you the victim's strength. Selena fought to keep her hands from trembling as she flipped through the pages, searching for anything about the marks under her bed. When the book yielded nothing, she returned to the summoning spell. A Ritterak. That was the name of the beast? What was it? Where had it been summoned from, if it wasn't? The word gates. She pressed the heels of her palms into her eyes. Someone was actually using the word marks to open a portal to summon this creature. It was impossible, because magic was gone, but the text said word marks existed outside of magic. What if their power still worked? But Nehemia? How could her friend do such a thing? Why did she need the champion's strength? And how could she keep everything hidden so well? Yet Nehemia could easily be a cunning actress. And maybe Selena had wanted a friend, wanted someone as different and outsiderly as she was. Maybe she'd been too willing, too desperate to see anything but what she wanted to see. Selena took a steadying breath. Nehemia loved Ilwe. That was certainly true. And Selena knew there was nothing Nehemia wouldn't do to keep her country safe. Unless... Ice moved through Selena's veins. Unless Nehemia was here to start something bigger. Unless she didn't want to make sure the king spared Ilwe at all. Unless she wanted what few dared whisper. Rebellion. And not rebellion as it was now, with rebel groups hiding out in the wilderness, but rather rebellion in the sense of entire kingdoms rising up against Otterlin, as it should have been from the start. But why kill the champions? Why not target royals? The ball would have been perfect for that. Why use word marks? She'd seen Nehemia's rooms. There were no signs of a demon beast lurking about, and nowhere in the castle where she could... Selena's eyes rose from the book. Blocked by the giant chest of drawers, the tapestry still rippled in a phantom breeze. There was nowhere in the castle to summon or hide a creature like that, except for the endless forgotten chambers and tunnels running beneath it.
No, she said,
standing so fast that it was all Fleetfoot could do to leap out of the way as her chair toppled over. No, it wasn't true, because it was Nehemia, because... Selena grunted as she pushed the chest to the side and folded the tapestry back from the wall. Just as it had 2 months ago, a cold, damp breeze leaked through the cracks, but it smelled nothing of roses. All of the murders had occurred within 2 days of a test. That meant tonight, or tomorrow, something would happen. The Ritterak, whatever it was, would strike again. And with the marks that she'd found painted under her bed, there was no way in hell she'd wait for it to show up. After shutting the whining Fleetfoot out of the bedroom, Selena covered the passage entry with the tapestry, wedged a book in the doorway to keep from getting locked in, and only once wished she had a weapon beyond the candlestick she carried and the makeshift knife in her pocket. Because if Nehemia had truly lied to her like that, and if Nehemia was murdering the champions, then Selena had to see it herself. If only so she could kill her with her bare hands.
Down and down she went, her breath thick in the frigid air. Water dripped somewhere, and Selena looked longingly at the middle archway as she approached the crossroads. There was no thought of escape now. What would be the point when she was so close to winning? If she'd lost, she'd sneak back here before they had a chance to ship her off to Endovir again. Selena studied the left and right side passages. The one to her left only led to a dead end. But the one on the right, that was the passage she'd taken to Elena's tomb. There she'd seen countless other passageways leading to unknown places. She stepped closer to the archway and froze when she saw the steps that descended into the murky darkness. The centuries-old dust had been disturbed. Footprints led up and down.
Nehemia and her creature must have been creeping around down here, just floors below everyone else. Hadn't Varen died just after he taunted her in front of Nehemia? Selena clutched her candlestick tighter and pulled her makeshift knife out of her pocket. Step after step, she began her descent down the stairwell. Soon she could no longer see the top landing, and the bottom never came any closer. But then whispers filled the corridor, slithering off the walls. She quieted her steps and shielded her candle as she neared. It wasn't the idle chat of servants, but someone speaking rapidly, almost chanting. Not Nehemia, a man. A landing approached below, opening into a room to her left. A greenish light seeped out of it onto the stones of the stairwell, which continued on past the landing and into darkness. The hair on her arms rose as the voice became clearer. It didn't speak any tongue that she recognized. It was guttural and harsh, and grated against her ears, as if it sucked the very warmth from her bones. The man panted as he spoke, like the words burned his throat, and finally he gasped for air. Silence fell. Setting down her candle, Selena crept toward the landing and peered inside the room. The oaken door had been thrown open, a giant key turned in its rusting lock. And inside the small chamber, kneeling before a darkness so black that it seemed poised to devour the world, was Kane. Chapter 42. Kane. The person who'd gotten stronger and better as the competition went on. She thought it was his training, but it was because he'd been using the word marks and the beast they summoned to steal the dead champion's strength. He dragged a hand across the floor before the darkness, and greenish light sprung up from where his fingers passed before being sucked into the void like wraiths on the wind. One of his hands was bleeding. She didn't dare to breathe as something stirred in the darkness. There was a click of claw on stone, and a hiss like an extinguished flame. And then, stepping toward Kane on knees that bent the wrong way, like an animal's hind legs, the Ritterak emerged. It was something out of an ancient god's nightmares. Its hairless gray skin was stretched tightly across its misshapen head, displaying a gaping mouth filled with black fangs. Fangs that had ripped out and eaten Varen and Xavier's internal organs. Fangs that had feasted on their brains. Its vaguely human body sank onto its haunches, and it slid its long front arms across the stone floor. The stones whined under the claws. Kane raised his head and stood slowly as the creature knelt before him and lowered its dark eyes. Submission. Selena only realized she was trembling when she made to step away, to flee as far and as fast as she could. Elena had been right. This was evil, plain and simple. The amulet pulsed at her neck, as if urging her to run. Her mouth dry, her blood pounding in her veins, she stepped back. Kane whirled to look at her, and the Ritterak's head shot up, its slithered nostrils sniffing twice. She froze, but as she did so, a massive wind shoved into her from behind, making her stagger into the room. "It wasn't meant to be you tonight," Kane said. But Selena's eyes remained on the beast, who began panting. "But this opportunity is too good to go to waste." "Kane?" was all she could say. The Ritterak's eyes, she'd never seen anything like them. There was nothing in them but hunger, endless, ageless hunger. The creature was not of this world. The word marks worked. The gates were real. She pulled the makeshift knife out of her pocket. It was pitifully small. How could hairpins make a dent in that creature's hide? Kane moved so quickly that she could only blink before he was behind her, her knife somehow now in his hand. No one human could move that quickly. It was as if he were no more than shadows and wind. "Pity," Kane whispered from the doorway, pocketing her knife. Selena glanced to the creature, to him, and then back. "I'll never get to know how you wound up down here in the first place." His fingers wrapped around the door handle. "Not that I care. Goodbye, Selena." The door slammed shut. The greenish light still seeped from the marks on the floor. Marks Kane had etched with his own blood, illuminating the creature who stared at her with those starving, relentless eyes. "Kane?" she whispered,
backing into the door as she fumbled with the handle. She twisted and yanked. It was locked. There was nothing in this room but stone and dust. How had she let him disarm her that easily?
Kane!
The door wouldn't budge.
Kane!
She shouted, and banged on the door with a fist hard enough to hurt. The Ritterak stalked back and forth on its four long, spidery limbs, sniffing at her, and Selena paused. Why didn't it attack immediately? It sniffed at her again, and swiped at the ground with a clawed hand, striking deep enough to take out a chunk of stone. It wanted her alive. Kane had incapacitated Varen while he summoned the creature. It liked its blood hot, so it would find the easiest way to immobilize her, and then... She couldn't breathe. No, not like this. Not in this chamber where no one would find her, where Kaol would never know why she disappeared, and would forever curse her for it, where she'd never get the chance to tell Nehemia she had been wrong. And Elena. Elena said someone wanted her in the tomb to see... To see what? And then she knew. The answer lay on her right, the right passageway, the passage that led to the tomb a few levels below. The creature sank back onto its haunches, poised to spring, and in that moment, Selena came up with the most reckless and brave plan she'd ever concocted. She dropped her cape to the floor. With a roar that shook the castle, the Ritterak ran for her. Selena remained before the door, watching as it galloped at her, sparks flying from its claws as they struck stone. 10 feet away, it leapt straight toward her legs. But Selena was already running, running straight at those black, rotting fangs. The Ritterak jumped for her, and she hurtled over the snarling thing. A thunderous, splintering boom erupted through the chamber as the Ritterak shattered the wooden floor. She could only imagine what it would have done to her legs. She didn't have time to think. She landed and whirled, charging back to where the creature had crashed through the door, and now sought to shake itself free of the pile of wood. She threw herself through the doorway and turned left, flying down the stairwell. She'd never make it back to her chambers alive, but if she was fast enough, perhaps she could make it to the tomb. The Ritterak roared again, and the stairwell shuddered. She didn't dare to look behind. She focused on her feet, on keeping upright as she bounded down the stairs, making for the landing below, illuminated by moonlight leaking from the tomb. Selena hit the landing, ran for the tomb door, and prayed to gods whose names she'd forgotten, but who she hoped had not yet forgotten her.
Someone wanted me to come here on Samhuin. Someone knew this would happen. Elena wanted me to see it, so I could survive.
The creature hit the bottom landing and charged after her, so close she could smell its reeking breath. The door to the tomb was wide open, as if someone had been waiting.
Please, please!
Grabbing onto the side of the doorway, she swung herself inside. She gained precious time as the Ritterak skidded to a halt, missing the tomb. It only took a moment for it to recover and charge, taking off a chunk of the door as it entered. The pounding of her feet echoed through the tomb as she ran between the sarcophagi for Damaris, the sword of the ancient king. Displayed atop its stand, the blade shone in the moonlight, the metal still gleaming after 1,000 years. The creature snarled, and she heard its deep intake of breath and the scrape of nails departing stone as the Ritterak leapt for her. She lunged for the sword, her left hand wrapping around the cool hilt as she twisted in the air and swung. She only had time to see its eyes and the blur of its skin before she drove Damaris through the Ritterak's face. Pain lanced through her hand as they slammed into the wall and fell to the ground, scattering treasure. Black blood that stank of waste sprayed onto her. She didn't move. Not as she stared at those black eyes barely inches from her own. Not as she saw her right hand held between its black teeth, her blood already oozing down its chin. She just panted and shook, not taking her left hand from the hilt of the sword, even after those hungry eyes turned dull and its body sagged atop hers. It was only when the amulet throbbed again that she blinked. Everything after that became a series of steps, a dance that she had to execute perfectly, or else she'd fall apart right there in that tomb and never get up. She first pried her hand from its teeth. It burned mercilessly. An arc of gushing puncture wounds encircled her thumb, and she swayed on her feet as she shoved the Ritterak off her. It was surprisingly light, as if its bones were hollow, or there were nothing inside of it. Though the world became foggy around the edges, she yanked Damaris from its skull. She used her shirt to wipe Gavin's blade clean and set it back where it belonged. That was why they'd brought her to the tomb on Samhuin, wasn't it? So she could see Damaris and have a way to save herself? She left the creature where it lay in a crumpled heap atop piles of jewels. Whoever had wanted to save her could clean it up. She'd had enough. Still, Selena paused beside Elena's sarcophagus and looked at the beautiful face carved from marble.
Thank you, she said hoarsely.
Her vision blurring, she left the tomb and staggered up the stairs, clutching her bleeding hand to her chest. When she was at last safely inside her chambers, Selena crossed to her bedroom door and leaned there, panting as she unlocked it. Her wound hadn't clotted, and blood was still pouring down her wrist. She listened to it drip onto the floor. She should go into the bathing room and wash her hand. Her palm felt like ice. She should... Her legs gave out, and Selena collapsed. Her eyelids became heavy, so she closed them. Why did her heart beat so slowly? She opened her eyes to look at her hand. Her eyesight was blurry, and all she could make out was a mess of pink and red. The ice in her hand reached up her arm, down to her legs. She heard a booming, thunderous noise, a thump, 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 followed by a whine. Through her eyelids, she could see the light in the room darken. She heard a cry, female, and warm hands grabbed her face. She was so cold, it almost burned. Had someone left the window open?
Lillian.
It was Nehemia. She shook Selena's shoulders.
Lillian, what happened to you?
Selena remembered little of the next few moments. Strong arms lifted her up and rushed her into the bathing chamber. Nehemia strained as she carried Selena into the bathing pool, where she stripped away Selena's clothes. Selena's hand burned when it touched the water, and she thrashed, but the princess held her firm, saying words in a tongue the assassin didn't understand. The light in the room pulsed, and her skin tingled. Selena found her arms covered in glowing turquoise marks. Word marks. Nehemia held her in the water, rocking back and forth. Blackness swallowed her up. Chapter 43 Selena opened her eyes. She was warm, and the candlelight was golden. She could smell lotus blossoms and a bit of nutmeg. She made a small noise and blinked, attempting to raise herself from the bed. What had happened? She could only recall climbing the stairs, then concealing the secret door behind the tapestry. Selena gave a start and grabbed at her tunic, gaping as she found that it had somehow turned into a nightgown, and then marveled at her hand as she lifted it into the air. It was healed, completely healed. The only remnants of the wounds was a half-moon-shaped scar between her thumb and index finger, and little bite marks from the Ritterak's lower teeth. She ran a finger over each of the chalk-white scars, tracing their curve, then wiggled her fingers to ensure no nerves had been severed. How was this possible? It was magic. Someone had healed her. She lifted herself and saw she was not alone. Nehemia sat in a chair nearby, staring at her. There was no smile on her lips, and Selena shifted as she beheld the mistrust in the young woman's eyes. Fleetfoot lay at her feet.
What happened? Selena asked.
That's what I have been waiting to ask you, said the princess in Eelway. She gestured at Selena's body. If I hadn't found you, you would have died from that bite within a few minutes. Even the blood she'd dropped on the floor had been cleaned.
Thank you, she said.
Then started as she looked to the darkened sky beyond the windows.
What day is it?
If somehow 2 days had passed and she'd missed the last test...
It's only been 3 hours.
Selena's shoulders sagged. She hadn't missed it. She still had tomorrow to train and the test the day after that.
I don't understand. How did...
That's not important, Nehemia interrupted. I want to know where you received that bite.
There was blood only in your bedroom, no traces of it in the hallway or anywhere else.
Selena clenched and unclenched her right hand, watching the scars stretch and contract. She had come so close to dying. She flicked her eyes to the princess, then back to her hand. Whatever Nehemia's involvement was, it wasn't with Kane.
I'm not who I pretend to be, Selena said quietly, unable to meet her friend's eyes. Lillian Gordana doesn't exist.
Nehemia didn't say anything.
Selena made herself look her in the eye. Nehemia had saved her. How had she dared to believe that Nehemia might be the one controlling that creature?
The truth was the least she owed her friend.
My name is Selena Sardothian.
Nehemia's mouth parted. Slowly, she shook her head.
But they sent you to Endovir. You were supposed to be in Endovir with...
Nehemia's eyes widened.
You speak the Ilwe of the peasants,
of those enslaved in Endovir.
That was how you learned.
Selena's breathing became a bit difficult.
Nehemia's lips trembled.
You went to Endovir?
Endovir is a death camp, but...
Why did you not tell me?
Do you not trust me?
Of course I do, she said, especially now that she'd proven beyond a doubt that she wasn't the one responsible for those murders. I was ordered by the king not to speak a word of it.
A word of what? Nehemia said sharply, blinking back her tears.
The king knows you're here? He gives you orders?
I'm here for his amusement. Selena sat up straighter in bed. I'm here because he's hosting a competition to be the king's champion. And after I win, if I win, I'm to work for the king for 4 years as his lackey and assassin. And then I'll be freed, and my name cleared.
Nehemia just looked at her, damning her with that blank stare.
You think I want to be here? Selena shouted, even though it made her head pound. It was either this or Endovir. I had no choice.
She put her hands on her chest.
Before you start lecturing me on my morality, or before you run away and hide behind your bodyguards, just know that there's not a moment that goes by when I don't wonder what it will be like to kill for him, the man who destroyed everything that I loved.
She couldn't breathe fast enough, not as the door inside her mind opened and closed, and the images that Selena had made herself forget flashed before her eyes. She closed them, wishing for darkness. Nehemia remained silent. Fleetfoot whined. In the quiet, people, places, words echoed in her mind. Then, footsteps. They brought her back. The mattress groaned and sighed as Nehemia sat. A second lighter weight joined her. Fleetfoot. Nehemia took Selena's hand in her warm, dry one. Selena opened her eyes, but stared at the wall across the room. Nehemia squeezed her hand.
You're my dearest friend, Selena. It hurt me. Hurt me more than I realized it would, to have things become so cold between us. To see you look at me with such distrust in your eyes. And I don't want to ever see you look at me like that again. So I wish to give to you what I have given to few before.
Her dark eyes shone.
Names are not important. It's what lies inside of you that matters.
I know what you went through in Endovir.
I know what my people endure there day after day. But you did not let the mines harden you. You did not let it shame your soul into cruelty.
The princess traced a mark on her hand, her fingers pressing into Selena's skin.
You bear many names, and so I shall name you as well.
Her hand rose to Selena's forehead, and she drew an invisible mark.
I name you Elentia.
She kissed the assassin's brow.
I give you this name to use with honor, to use when other names grow too heavy. I name you Elentia, spirit that could not be broken.
Selena was held in place. She could feel the name fall upon her like a shimmering veil. This was unconditional love.
Friends like this did not exist. Why was she so fortunate as to have found one?
Come, Nehemia said brightly. Tell me about how you became Otterlin's assassin, and how you wound up in this castle exactly,
and what the details are of this absurd competition. Selena smiled slightly as Fleetfoot wagged her tail and licked Nehemia's arm.
She had saved her life.
Somehow. Answers for that would come later.
so Selena spoke.
The following morning, Selena walked beside Kaol, her eyes on the marble floor of the hallway. The sun radiated off of the snow in the garden, making the light in the hall nearly blinding. She'd told Nehemia almost everything. There were certain things she'd never tell anyone, and she hadn't mentioned Cain or the creature, either. Nehemia hadn't asked her again what had bitten her hand, but had stayed with her, curled up in bed as they talked long into the night. Selena, unsure how she'd ever sleep again now that she knew what Cain could do, had been grateful for the company. She pulled her cloak tighter around her. The morning was unnaturally frigid.
"You're quiet today."
Kaol kept his gaze ahead of them.
"Did you and Dorian have a fight?"
Dorian. He'd stopped by last night, but Nehemia had shooed him off before he could enter the bedroom. "No, I haven't seen him since yesterday morning." After the events of last night, yesterday morning seemed like a week ago.
"Did you enjoy dancing with him at the ball?"
Were his words a bit sharp? She turned to him as they rounded a corner, heading toward a private training room. "You left rather early. I would have thought you'd want to guard me the whole night."
"You don't need me to watch you anymore."
"I didn't need you to watch me from the start." He shrugged.
"Now I know you're not going anywhere."
Outside, a howling wind kicked up a flurry of snow, sending a sparkling wave into the air. "I could go back to Endovir."
"You won't."
"How do you know that?"
"I just know.
That gives me heaps of confidence." He chuckled, continuing toward the sparring room.
"I'm surprised your dog didn't run after you, for all the crying she did just now."
"If you had a pet, you wouldn't make fun," she said gloomily.
"I've never had a pet. I never wanted one."
"That's probably a blessing for whatever dog might have wound up as your companion." He jabbed her with an elbow. She grinned and elbowed him back. She wanted to tell him about Cain. She'd wanted to tell him when she saw him at her door this morning. She wanted to tell him everything. But he couldn't know. Because, she'd realized last night, if she told him about Cain and the creature he'd unleashed, then he'd ask to see the remains of the creature. And that meant taking him into the secret passage. While he might trust her enough to leave her alone with Dorian, knowing that she had access to an unguarded escape route was a test she wasn't ready to give Kaol. "Besides, I killed it. It's over. Elena's mysterious evil is vanquished. Now I'll just defeat Cain in the duel, and then no one needs to know." Kaol stopped before the unmarked door of their practice room and whirled to face her.
"I'm only going to ask you this once, and then I won't ask it again," he said,
staring at her so intensely that she shifted on her feet.
"Do you know what you're getting into with Dorian?"
She laughed, a harsh cawing noise. "Are you giving me romantic advice? And is this for my sake or Dorian's?"
"Both."
"I didn't realize that you cared enough about me to bother, or even notice." To his credit, he didn't take the bait. Instead, he just unlocked the door.
"Just remember to use your brain, will you?"
he said over his shoulder, and entered the room. An hour later, sweating and still panting from the swordplay practice, Selena wiped her brow on her sleeve as they made their way back to her rooms.
"The other day, I saw you were reading Elric and Emmet," he said. "I thought you hated poetry."
"It's different." She swung her arms. "Epic poetry isn't boring or pretentious."
"Oh?"
A crooked smile twisted across his face.
"A poem about massive battles and boundless love isn't pretentious?"
She playfully punched his shoulder, and he laughed. Surprisingly delighted at his laughter, she cackled. But then they turned a corner, and guards filled the hall, and she saw him. The King of Otterlin. Chapter 44. The King. Selena's heart gave a screech and dove behind her spine. Each of the little scars on her hand throbbed. He strode toward them, his monstrous form filling the too small hallway, and their eyes met. She went cold and hot at once. Kaol halted and bowed low. Slowly, not wishing to find herself swinging from the gallows just yet, Selena bowed too.
He stared at her with eyes of iron. The hair on her arms rose. She could feel him searching, looking for something inside of her. He knew that something was wrong, that something had changed in his castle. Something to do with her. Selena and Kaol rose and stepped aside. His head turned to examine her as he strode past. Could he see what lay beyond her flesh? Did he know that Kane had the ability to open portals, real portals, to other worlds? Did he know that even though he'd banned magic, the word marks still commanded a power of their own? Power the king could wield if he learned to summon demons like the Ritterak. There was a darkness in his eyes that felt cold and foreign, like the gaps between the stars. Could one man destroy a world? Was his ambition so consuming? She could hear the din of war. The king's head shifted to look at the hallway ahead. Something dangerous lurked about him. It was an air of death that she'd felt standing before that black void summoned by Kane. It was the stench of another world. A dead world. What was Elena's goal in demanding that she get close to him? Selena managed to walk, one step at a time, away from the king. Her eyes were far away and distant, and though she didn't look at Kaol, she felt him studying her face. Thankfully, he didn't say a word. It was nice to have someone who understood. Kaol also didn't say anything when she moved closer to him for the remainder of their walk. Kaol paced through his room, his time with Selena over until she'd train with the other champions that afternoon. After lunch, he'd return to his room to read the report detailing the king's journey. And in the past 10 minutes, he'd read the thing 3 times. He crumpled the paper in his fist. Why had the king arrived alone? And, more importantly, how had everyone in his traveling party died? It wasn't clear where he'd gone. He'd mentioned the White Fang Mountains, but why were they all dead? The king had vaguely hinted at some sort of issue with rebels poisoning their food stores, but the details were murky enough to suggest that the truth was buried somewhere else. Perhaps he hadn't explained it fully because it would upset his subjects. But Kaol was his captain of the guard. If the king didn't trust him... The clock struck, and Kaol's shoulders sagged. Poor Selena. Did she know that she looked like a frightened animal when the king appeared? He'd almost wanted to pat her on the back. And the effect the king had on her lasted long after their encounter. She'd been distant during lunch. She was incredible now, so fast he had difficulty keeping up with her. She could scale a wall with ease, and had even demonstrated by climbing up to her own balcony with nothing but her bare hands. It unnerved him, especially when he remembered she was only 18. He wondered if this was how she'd been before in Dovir. She never hesitated when they sparred, but she seemed to sink far within herself, into a place that was calm and cool, but also angry and burning. She could kill anyone, Kane included, in a matter of seconds. But if she became champion, could they let her loose into Aurelia once more? He was fond of her, but Kaol didn't know if he could sleep at night knowing that he had retrained and released the world's greatest assassin. If she won, though, she'd be here for 4 years. What had the king thought when he saw them together laughing? Surely that hadn't been his reason for neglecting to tell him what happened to his men. No. The king wouldn't bother to care about that kind of thing, especially if Selena might soon be his champion. Kaol rubbed his shoulder. She'd looked so small when she saw the king. Since returning from his travels, the king hadn't seemed any different and was just as gruff with Kaol as he'd always been. But the sudden disappearance, then returning without a single soul. There was something brewing, a cauldron that the king had journeyed to stir. Selena somehow knew it too. The captain of the guard leaned against a wall, staring at the ceiling. He shouldn't press into the king's business. Right now, his focus was on solving the murders of the champions and on making sure Selena won. It wasn't even about Dorian's pride anymore. Selena wouldn't survive another year in Endovir. Kaol smiled slightly. She'd stirred up enough trouble in the months she'd been in the castle. He could only imagine what would happen over the next 4 years. Chapter 45 Selena panted as she and Nox lowered their swords,
the weapons master shouting at the five champions to get some water. Tomorrow was their last test before the duel. She kept her distance when Kane lumbered toward the water jug on the table by the far wall, watching his every movement. She eyed his muscles, his height, his girth. All strength stolen from the dead champions. She studied the black ring on his finger. Did it somehow have a connection to his horrible abilities? He hadn't even looked all that surprised to see her alive when she'd entered the training hall. He'd just given her a small, taunting smile and picked up his practice sword. "Is something the matter?" Nock said, his breathing ragged as he stopped by her side. Kane, Grave, and Renault were talking amongst themselves. "You were a bit off balance." How had Kane learned to summon that creature? And what was that blackness from whence it had appeared? Was it truly just so he could win the competition? "Or," Nox continued, "do you have other thoughts on your mind?" She shoved Kane out of her head.
"What?"
He grinned at her. "It seemed like you were rather enjoying the Crown Prince's attention at the ball."
"Mind your own business," she snapped.
Nox held up his hands. "I didn't mean to pry." She walked to the water jug, not saying a word to Nox as she poured herself a glass, and didn't bother to offer him one. He leaned in as she set down the jug. "Those scars on your hand are new." She stuffed her hand into a pocket, her eyes flashing.
"Mind your own business," she repeated.
She stepped away, but Nox grabbed her arm. "You told me to stay in my rooms the other night, and those scars look like bite marks. They say Varen and Xavier were killed by animals." His gray eyes narrowed. "You know something." She glanced over her shoulder at Kane, who was joking with Grave as if he weren't a demon-summoning psychopath.
"There are only 5 of us left. 4 make it to the duels, and the tests tomorrow. Whatever happened to Varen and Xavier, it wasn't an accident. Not when their deaths occurred within 2 days of the tests."
She shook her arm out of his grasp.
"Be careful," she hissed. "Tell me what you know."
She couldn't, not without sounding insane.
"If you were smart, you'd get out of this castle."
"Why?" He shot a look at Kane. "What aren't you saying?"
Brello finished his water and went to retrieve his sword. She didn't have much time before he called them to resume.
"I'm saying that if I didn't have any other choice but to be here, if it wasn't between this and death, I would be halfway across Aurelia by now and not looking back."
Nox rubbed his neck.
"I don't understand a word of what you just said. Why don't you have a choice? I know things are bad with your father, but surely he won't..."
She silenced him with a pointed stare.
"And you're not a jewel thief, are you?"
She shook her head. Nox glanced again at Kane.
"Kane knows, too.
That's why he always tries to rile you, to get you to show who you truly are." She nodded. What difference did it make if he knew? She had more important things to worry about now. Like how she'd survive until the duels, or stop Kane.
"But who are you?" Nox said. She bit her lip.
"You said your father moved you to Endovir, that much is true. The prince went there to retrieve you. There's evidence of that journey." Even as he said it, his eyes slid toward her back. She could practically see the revelations as they bloomed in his mind.
"And you weren't in the town of Endovir. You were in Endovir. The salt mines. That explains why you were so painfully thin when I first saw you."
Brello clapped his hands. "Come on, you lot, drills!" Nox and Selena remained by the table. His eyes were wide.
"You were a slave in Endovir?"
She couldn't form the words to confirm it. Nox was too smart for his own good.
"But you're barely a woman. What did you do to..."
His gaze fell on Kaol and the guards who stood near them.
"Would I have heard your name before?
Would I have heard that you were shipped to Endovir?"
"Yes. Everyone heard when I went,"
she breathed, and watched as he sorted through every name he'd ever heard associated with the place, then put the pieces together. He took a step back.
"You're a girl?"
"Surprising, I know. Everyone thinks I'm older."
Nox ran a hand through his black hair.
"And you can either be the king's champion or go back to Endovir?"
"That's why I can't leave."
Brello shouted at them to start their drills.
And while I'm telling you to get out of the castle while you can.
She took her hand from her pocket and showed it to him.
I received this from a creature I can't even begin to describe to you, nor would you believe me if I tried. But there are five of us now, and because the test is tomorrow, that means one more night we're at risk. I don't understand any of this,
Nock said, still keeping back a step.
You don't have to. But you're not going back to prison if you fail, and you're not going to be the champion even if you make it to the duels. So you need to leave. Do I want to know what's killing the champions?
She fought her shudder as she recalled the fangs and stench of the creature.
No, she said, unable to keep the fear from her voice. You don't. You just have to trust me, and trust that I'm not trying to eliminate my competition by tricking you.
Whatever he read in her expression made his shoulders sag.
All of this time, I thought you were just some pretty girl from Bellhaven who stole jewels to get her father's attention. Little did I know that the blonde-haired girl was queen of the underworld.
He smiled ruefully.
Thank you for warning me. You could have opted to say nothing.
You were the only one who bothered to take me seriously, she said, smiling with warmth that she meant. I'm surprised you even believe me. Brello shouted at them, and they began walking back to the group. Kaol's eyes were hard upon them. She knew he'd question her about their conversation later.
Do me a favor, Selena?
Nock said. The sound of her name startled her. He brought his mouth close to her ear.
Rip Kane's head off, he whispered with a wicked grin.
Selena only smiled back at him and nodded. Nox left early that night, slipping out of the castle without a word to anyone. The clock chimed five, and Caltaine fought the urge to rub her eyes as the opium oozed through every pore of her body. In the light of the setting sun, the castle hallways were awash with red and orange and gold, the colors bleeding together. Parrington had asked her to join his dinner table in the great hall, and she normally wouldn't have dared to smoke before a public meal, but the headache that had plagued her all afternoon hadn't gotten any better. The hall seemed to stretch on forever. She ignored the passing courtiers and servants, focusing instead on the fading day. Someone approached from the other end, a smear of black against the gold and orange light. Shadows seemed to leak from him, flowing onto the stones and the windows and the walls like spilled ink. She tried to swallow as she neared him, but found her tongue to be leaden and paper dry. Each step brought him closer, made him bigger and taller, and her heartbeat thundered in her ears. Perhaps the opium had gone bad. Perhaps she'd smoked too much this time. Amid the pounding in her ears and her head, the whisper of wings filled the air. In the space between blinks, she could have sworn she saw things swooping past him in swift, vicious circles, hovering above him, waiting, waiting, waiting.
Milady?
Kane said, bowing his head as he strode by. Caltaine said nothing. She clenched her sweaty palms and continued toward the great hall. It took a while for the sound of flapping wings to fade, but by the time she reached the Duke's table, she'd forgotten all about it. After dinner that night, Selena sat across the chessboard from Dorian. The kiss following the ball 2 days ago hadn't been so bad. Nice, actually, if she was being honest. Of course, he'd returned tonight, and so far there had been no mention of the fresh scars on her hand, or the kiss. And she'd never, not in a million years, tell him about the Ritterrack. She might feel something for him, but if he told his father about the power of the word marks and word gates, her blood chilled at the thought. But looking at him, with his face illuminated by firelight, she couldn't see any resemblance to his father. No, she could only see his kindness and intelligence, and maybe he was a tad arrogant, but... Selena's toes scratched Fleetfoot's ears. She'd expected him to stay away, to move on to another woman now that he'd tasted her.
Well, did he even want to taste you in the first place?
He moved his high priestess, and Selena laughed. Do you really wish to do that? She asked. His face contorted with confusion, and she picked up her pawn, moving it diagonally, and easily knocked over the piece. Damn, he cried, and she cackled. Here, she handed him the piece. Take it and try another move.
No, I'll play like a man and accept my losses.
They laughed, but silence soon crept over them. A smile still played about her lips, and he reached for her hand. She wanted to pull it away, but couldn't bring herself to do it. He held her hand over the board and smoothly flattened their palms against each other, interlocking his fingers with hers. His hand was calloused, but sturdy. Their entwined hands rested on the side of the table.
One needs both hands to play chess, she said, wondering if it were possible for her heart to explode.
Fleetfoot huffed and trotted away, probably to disappear under the bed.
I think you only need one.
He moved a piece all over the board.
See?
She chewed her lip. Still, she didn't pull her hand from his.
Are you going to kiss me again?
I'd like to.
She couldn't move as he leaned toward her, closer and closer, the table groaning beneath them, until he stopped, his lips just a hair's breadth from hers.
I ran into your father in the hall today, she blurted.
Dorian slowly sat back in his chair.
And?
And it was fine, she lied. His eyes narrowed. He lifted her chin with a finger.
You didn't say that to avoid the inevitable, did you?
No, she'd said that just to keep talking, to keep him here as long as he would be willing to stay, so she didn't have to face a night alone with the threat of Cain hovering over her. Who better to keep her at her side in the dark hours of the night than the son of the king? Cain wouldn't dare harm him. But all of this, everything that had happened with the Ritterrack, meant all the books she'd read were true. What if Cain could summon anything to him, like the dead? There were many people who lost their fortunes when magic vanished. Even the king himself might be intrigued by this sort of power.
You're trembling, Dorian said.
She was. Like a damned idiot, she was trembling.
Are you all right?
He moved around the table to sit beside her. She couldn't tell him.
No, he could never know.
Just as he couldn't know that when she'd checked under her bed before dinner, there were fresh chalk marks for her to wash away. Cain knew that she'd discovered how he was eliminating the competition. Perhaps he'd hunt her down tonight, or perhaps not. She hadn't the faintest idea. But she'd get little sleep tonight, or until Cain was impaled on the end of her sword.
I'm fine, she said,
though her voice was little more than a whisper. But if he kept asking, she was bound to tell him.
Are you sure that you're feeling?
He began, but she surged forward and kissed him. She almost knocked him to the floor, but he shot out an arm to the back of the chair and braced himself as his spare arm wrapped around her middle. She let the touch, the taste of him fill the room of her mind with water. She kissed him, hoping to steal some of his air. Her fingers entangled themselves in his hair, and as he kissed her fiercely, she let everything fade away. The clock chimed 3. Selena sat on her bed, knees curled to her chest. After hours of kissing and talking and more kissing on her bed, Dorian had left only minutes before. She'd been tempted to ask him to stay. The smart thing would have been to ask him to stay. But the thought of Dorian being here when Cain or the Ritterrack came for her, or of Dorian being hurt, made her let him go. Too tired to read, but too awake to sleep, she just stared at the crackling fire. Every bump and footstep made her jolt, and she'd managed to swipe a few pins from Philippa's sewing basket when she wasn't looking, but a makeshift knife, a heavy book, and a candlestick weren't protection against what Cain could summon.
You shouldn't have left Damaris in the tomb.
Going back down there wasn't an option, not while Cain lived. She hugged her knees, shivering as she recalled the utter blackness from which the thing had come. Cain must have learned about the word marks in the White Fang Mountains, that cursed borderland between Otterlin and the Western Wastes. They said that evil still crept out of the ruins of the Witch Kingdom, and that old women with iron teeth still wandered the lonely roads in the mountain passes. The hair on her arms rose, and she grabbed a fur blanket from her bed to wrap around herself. If she could stay alive until the duels, she'd defeat Cain, and this would all be over. Then she could sleep soundly again, unless Elena had something else, something bigger in mind. Selena rested her cheek against her knee, listening to the clock tick, 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 long into the night. Thundering hooves beat the frozen ground,
faster and faster as the rider whipped the horse. Snow and mud lay thick on the earth, and rogue snowflakes drifted through the night sky. Selena ran, swifter than her young legs could manage. Everything hurt. Trees ripped at her dress and hair. Stones sliced her feet. She scrambled through the woods, breathing so hard she couldn't muster the air to cry for help. She must reach the bridge. It couldn't cross the bridge. Behind her, a sword shrieked as it was drawn from its sheath. She fell, slamming into mud and rock. The sound of the approaching demon filled the air as she struggled to rise. But the mud held fast, and she could not run. Reaching for a bush, her small hands bleeding, the horse now close behind, she... Selena gasped and awoke. She put her hand to her heart and pushed against her chest as it lifted and fell. It was a dream. The fire had dwindled to embers. A cold gray light seeped in through her curtains. It was only a nightmare. She must have dozed off at some point during the night. She clutched her amulet, running a thumb across the stone in the center. Some protection you were when that thing attacked me the other night. Frowning, she gently arranged her covers around Fleetfoot and stroked the dog's head for a moment. Dawn was near. She'd made it through another night. Sighing, Selena lay back and closed her eyes. A few hours later, when news of Knox's departure spread, she received notice that the last test had been canceled. She would duel against Grave, Renault, and Kane tomorrow. Tomorrow. And then her freedom would be decided. Chapter 46. The forest was still and frozen around Dorian, and snow collapsed from the trees in large clumps as he passed by. His eyes darted among the branches and bushes. He'd needed to come out for a hunt today, if only to let the freezing air rush through him. He saw her face each time he closed his eyes. She haunted his thoughts, made him wish to do grand and wonderful things in her name, made him want to be a man who deserved to wear a crown. But Selena, he didn't know how she felt. She kissed him, greedily at that, but the women he'd loved in the past had always been eager. They'd gazed at him adoringly, while she just looked at him like a cat watching a mouse. Dorian straightened, detecting nearby movement. A stag stood 10 yards away, feeding on bark. He stopped his horse and drew an arrow from its quiver, but he slackened the bow. She was to duel tomorrow. If harm came to her, no, she could hold her own. She was strong and smart and quick. He'd gone too far. He should never have kissed her. Because now, no matter how he might have once envisioned his future, or who he thought he'd spend it with, he couldn't imagine being with anyone else, wanting anyone else. Snow began falling. Dorian glanced at the gray sky and rode on through the silent game park. Selena stood before her balcony doors, staring down at Rifthold. The roofs were still snow-covered, and lights twinkled in every home. It might have looked beautiful, had she not known what corruption and filth dwelt within it, and what monstrosity ruled over it all. She hoped Knox was far, far away. She told her guards she didn't want any visitors tonight, and to turn away even Kaol and Dorian if they arrived. Someone had knocked, once, but she didn't answer, and they had soon left without trying again. She put her hand on a pane of glass, savoring its frozen bite. The clock struck 12. Tomorrow, or was it today already, she'd face Kane. She'd never sparred with him in practice. The other champions had been too eager to get a piece of him. While Kane was strong, he wasn't as fast as she was. But he had stamina. She'd have to dodge him for a while. She just prayed all that running with Kaol would keep her from tiring before him. If she lost, don't even give yourself that option. She leaned her forehead against the glass. Would it be more honorable to fall in the duel than to return to Endovir? Or would it be more honorable to die than to become the king's champion? Who would he have her kill? She'd had a say as Otterlin's assassin. Even with Arabin Hommel running her life, she'd always had a say in what jobs she took. No children. No one from Terrasen.
but the king could tell her to kill anyone. Did Elena expect her to say no to him when she was his champion? Her stomach rose in her throat. Now wasn't the time for this. She had to focus on Cain, on wearing him down. But try as she might, all she could think about was that half-starved, hopeless assassin who'd been dragged out of Endovir one autumn day by a snarling captain of the guard. What would she have said to the prince's bargain, had she known she would come to stand poised to lose so much? Would she have laughed if she'd known that other things, other people, would come to mean as much as her freedom? Selena swallowed the lump in her throat. Perhaps there were other reasons to fight tomorrow. Perhaps a few months in the castle hadn't been enough. Perhaps she wanted to stay here for reasons other than her eventual freedom. That was one thing that hopeless assassin from Endovir would never have believed. But it was true. She wanted to stay. And that would make tomorrow so much harder.
Chapter 47 Kaltane pulled her red cape around her, savoring its warmth. Why were the duels outside? She'd freeze before the assassin arrived. She fingered the vial in her pocket and glanced at the two goblets on the wooden table. The one on the right was for Sir Dothian. She must not confuse them. She looked to Parrington, who stood near the king. He had no idea what she'd do once Sir Dothian was out of the way, once Dorian was free again. Her blood grew warm and glittering. The Duke moved toward her, and Kaltane kept her eyes on the tiled veranda where the duel was to occur. He stopped in front of her, making a wall between her and the other council members so that none could see.
"A bit chilly for an outside duel," he said.
Kaltane smiled and let the folds of her cloak fall over the table as he kissed her hand. With a veil of red to conceal her stealthy free hand, Kaltane flicked off the lid of the vial and dumped the contents into the wine. The vial was back in her pocket as he raised himself, just enough to weaken Sir Dothian, to make her dizzy and disoriented. A guard appeared in the doorway, and then another. Between them strode a figure. She wore men's clothes, though Kaltane was forced to admit that her black and gold jacket was a fine make. It was strange to think of this woman as an assassin, but seeing her now, all of her oddities and faults made sense. Kaltane ran a finger along the base of the goblet and grinned. Duke Parrington's champion emerged from behind the clock tower. Kaltane's brows rose. They thought Sir Dothian could defeat such a man if she wasn't drugged? Kaltane took a step back from the table, and Parrington moved to sit beside the king as the other two champions arrived. With eager faces, they waited for blood. Standing on the wide veranda that encompassed the obsidian clock tower, Selena tried not to shiver. She couldn't see the point in having the duels outside, well, apart from making the champions even more uncomfortable. She glanced longingly at the glass windows that lined the wall of the castle, and then at the frost-covered garden. Her hands were already numb. Tucking them into her fur-lined pockets, she approached Kaol, who was standing near the edge of the giant chalk circle that had been drawn on the flagstones. "It's freezing out here," she said. The collar and sleeves of her black jacket were lined with rabbit fur, but it wasn't enough. "Why didn't you tell me it was outside?" Kaol shook his head, looking at Grave and at Renault, the mercenary from Skull's Bay, who, to her satisfaction, also seemed fairly miserable in the cold.
"We didn't know. The king decided just now," Kaol said. "At least it should be over quickly."
He smiled slightly, though she didn't return it. The sky was bright blue, and she gritted her teeth as a strong gust of wind ripped into her. The 13 seats of the table were filling up, and at the center of the table sat the king and Parrington. Kaltane stood behind Parrington, wearing a beautiful red cloak lined with white fur. Their eyes met, and Selena wondered why the woman smiled at her. Kaltane then looked away, toward the tower, and Selena followed her gaze and understood. Cain was leaning against the clock tower. His muscles were barely contained within his tunic. All that stolen strength. What would have happened if the Ritterak had killed her, too? How much stronger would he be today?
Worse, he was wearing the red and gold garb of a member of the royal guard. The wyvern emblazoned across his broad chest. The sword at his side was beautiful. A gift from Parrington, no doubt. Did the Duke know the power his champion wielded? Even if she tried to reveal him, no one would ever believe her. Nausea gripped her, but Kaol took her by the elbow and escorted her to the far end of the veranda. At the table, she noticed two aging men casting anxious glances at her. She nodded to them.
Lords Urzen and Garnal, it seems you obtained what you desired enough to kill for, and it seems someone told you who I actually am.
It had been 2 years ago that they hired her, separately, to kill the same man. She hadn't bothered to tell them, of course, and accepted both their payments. She winked at Lord Garnal, and he paled, knocking over his goblet of hot cocoa and ruining the papers before him. Oh, she'd keep their secrets. It would tarnish her reputation otherwise. But if her freedom came down to a vote... She smiled at Lord Urizen, who looked away. Her gaze shifted to another man, who she found staring at her.
The king.
Deep inside, she quaked, but she bowed her head.
Are you ready?
Kaol asked. Selena blinked, remembering that he was beside her. Yes, she said, though she didn't mean it. The wind whipped through her hair, knotting it with frozen fingers. Dorian appeared by the table, heartbreakingly handsome as always, and gave her a grim smile as he stuffed his hands in his pockets and looked toward his father. The last of the king's councilmen sat down at the table. Selena cocked her head as Nehemia emerged to stand along the sidelines of the large white circle. The princess met her stare and lifted her chin in encouragement. She wore a spectacular outfit, close-fitting pants, a layered tunic studded with whorls of iron, and knee-high boots. She carried her wooden staff, which stretched as high as her head. To honor her, Selena realized, her eyes stinging. One fellow warrior acknowledging the other. Everyone grew silent as the king rose. Her insides turned to stone, and she felt clumsy and thick, but also light and weak as a newborn. Kaol nudged her with an elbow, motioning for her to stand before the table. She focused on her feet as she moved, and wouldn't look at the king's face. Thankfully, Renault and Grave flanked her. If Kane had been standing beside her, she might have snapped his neck just to end it there.
There were so many people watching her.
She stood not 10 feet from the King of Otterlin. Freedom or death lay at this table. Her past and future were seated on a glass throne. Her gaze shifted to Nehemia, whose fierce and graceful eyes warmed the marrow of her bones and steadied her arms. The King of Otterlin spoke. Knowing that seeing his face would only weaken the strength she'd found in Nehemia's eyes, she looked not at him, but at the throne behind him. She wondered if Caltaine's presence meant that Duke Parrington had told her who Selena truly was.
You were taken from your miserable lives so you might prove yourself worthy of becoming a sacred warrior to the crown. After months of training, the moment has come to decide who my champion shall be. You will face each other in a duel. You can win only by trapping your opponent in a position of sure death. And no further, he added with a sharp glance in her direction. Kane and Councilman Garnal's champion will go first. Then my son's champion will face Councilman Mullison's champion.
Of course the king would know Kane's name. He might as well have just declared the brute his champion.
The winners will face each other in a final duel. Whoever wins will be crowned king's champion. Is that clear?
They nodded. For a heartbeat, she saw the king with stark clarity. He was just a man with too much power. And in that one heartbeat, she didn't fear him.
I will not be afraid, she vowed,
wrapping the familiar words around her heart.
Then let the duels commence on my command, the king said.
Taking that as a sign that she could clear out of the ring, Selena stalked to where Kaol stood and took up a place beside him. Kane and Renault bowed to the king, then to each other, and drew their swords. She ran an eye down Renault's body as he took his stance. She'd seen him square off against Kane before. He'd never won, but he always managed to hold out longer than she would have thought possible. Perhaps he'd win. But Cain lifted his sword. He had the better weapon. And he had half a foot on Renault.
Begin,
the king said. Metal flashed. They struck each other and danced back. Renault, refusing to take up the defensive, swept forward again, landing a few strong blows on Cain's blade. She forced her shoulders to relax, forced herself to breathe down the cold air.
Do you think it was just poor luck, she murmured to Kaol, that I'm the one going second?
He kept his attention on the duel.
I think you'll be allowed proper time to rest.
He jerked his chin at the dueling men.
Cain sometimes forgets to guard his right side. Look there.
Selena watched as Cain struck, twisting his body so his right side was wide open.
Renault doesn't even notice.
Cain grunted and pressed Renault's blade, forcing the mercenary to take a step back.
He just missed his chance.
The wind roared around them.
Keep your wits about you,
Kaol said, still watching the duel. Renault was retreating, each swing of Cain's blade taking him closer and closer to the line of chalk that had been drawn on the ground. One step outside of that ring and he'd be disqualified.
He'll try to provoke you. Don't get angry. Focus only on his blade and that unprotected side of his.
I know, she said, and shifted her gaze back to the duel just in time to see Renault cry out and stumble back. Blood sprayed from his nose, and he hit the ground hard. Cain, his fist smeared with Renault's blood, only smiled as he pointed the blade at Renault's heart. The mercenary's bloody face went white, and he bared his teeth as he stared up at his conqueror. She looked at the clock tower. He hadn't lasted 3 minutes. There was polite clapping, and Selena noticed that Lord Garnell's face was set with fury. She could only guess how much money he'd just lost.
A valiant effort,
said the king. Cain bowed and didn't offer Renault a hand to help him rise before he stalked toward the opposite end of the veranda. With more dignity than Selena had expected, Renault got to his feet and bowed to the king, mumbling his thanks. Clutching his nose, the mercenary slunk away. What had he stood to lose, and where would he return to now? Across the ring, Graves smiled at her as he wrapped a hand around the hilt of his sword. She bit down on her grimace at the sight of his teeth. Of course she'd have to duel the grotesque one. At least Renault had been clean-looking.
We will begin in a moment, the king said. Prepare your weapons.
With that, he turned to Parrington and began speaking too quietly for anyone else to hear in the blustering wind. Selena turned to Kaol, but instead of handing her the plain-as-porridge sword she usually wielded in practice, he drew his own blade. The eagle-shaped pommel glinted in the midday sun.
Here, he said.
She blinked at the blade, and slowly raised her face to look at him. She found the rolling earthen hills of the north in his eyes. It was a sense of loyalty to his country that went beyond the man seated at the table. Far inside of her, she found a golden chain that bound them together.
Take it, he said.
Her heartbeat thundered in her ears. She lifted a hand to grab the blade,